You know, it's true. When something exceeds your ability to understand how it works, it sort of becomes magical. And that's exactly what the iPad is.
Hello, and welcome to the Colcassi Best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, I don't know why I did that so sexy. Joining me today is love of traversing the wilderness with nothing but a loincloth on, kind of makes him a modern-day Tarzan in my book. Buster Gein is here.
Oh, hello.
Dude, you look so good in loincloths.
Thanks, man.
Speaking of someone else who looks good in loincloths, there's a good chance you've seen him in the tree outside your bedroom window. Leander Caney is here.
What the heck? Where did you get that from?
I don't know why the idea of you having a great love of Peeping Tom is so funny to me. It just really makes me crack up.
Excellent. Great.
I always picture you falling down from that tree in Back to the Future and being hit by Lorraine's dad in the car. There's just something about you, Leander, that says, you know, I'm a cool guy. I like to hang out at the bar, and I might end up in the tree outside your bedroom window.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's a question of, you know, the pot calling the kettle black.
I'm not saying that I don't partake of that activity. And maybe we could do it together sometime. if I come back to San Francisco, we can climb the same tree together. It's a great use of a Saturday. Man, that didn't take long to get off the rails at all, did it? Well, we have some Apple news to talk about this week with you all. Kind of a slow news week, and I'll be honest with you, we're going to be talking about iPads. I don't know why I feel so guilty talking about iPads. I feel like we have some exciting iPad news coming up, but it really feels like iPads are like the lamest Apple topic to talk about. Why do I feel that way? I just feel like if we never talked about iPads again, no one who listens to this show would care.
But we all use iPads all day, every day.
I know, but there's nothing sexy about iPads anymore. Wouldn't you say? There's just nothing exciting about them anymore.
I don't know.
I think your reaction might have just proved my point.
I was definitely trying to think of something to say, but yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time since the iPad has been sexy, and I think Apple realizes that. So this is why this actually might be exciting. It feels like they're trying to sexy up the iPad line with this new bezel-less 10.5-inch iPad that we're kind of all expecting to see, and maybe arriving as early as next month, according to reports. But we'll talk about that. If you stay tuned till the end, we're going to be doing something we haven't done in a long time. It's a little game. We figure, why not? We're slow on Apple News. we'll beef up this show with a game that I call Cultcast Choices. This is the game where we decide between accepting a powerful gift or avoiding its very annoying side effects. And I've got some choice questions lined up for you guys. These are going to be some tough decisions. I'm telling you that right now. So before we hop into the news, let me go ahead and say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. You may need a new bed, and you may not even know it. Are you waking up with sore joints, sore shoulders, sore back? That used to happen to me all the time. And a new bed, much to my surprise, fixed it. So if you're having some of the same problems, it's worth checking out a Casper and their obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It is a supportive memory foam, and they mix it together in all the right amounts to create an award-winning sleep surface that has just the right amount of sink and just the right amount of bounce. They went through like over 100 prototypes of this thing to come up with just the right bed. And Casper mattresses are extremely popular. Go on to Amazon, go on to Casper's website. You can check it out at casper.com/cultcast, in fact, and read the reviews of real people using their Casper mattress. People love Casper mattresses, and they are available at a price that you really won't believe. Most high-end beds cost $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $10,000. And you can get a Casper for under $1,000, and you can get a king-size Casper for under $1,000. Well, you can try Casper 100 nights for free in your own home to see how you'll like it. You can go to casper.com/cultcast and they will ship one out to you. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you 100% of your money because they want you to be happy with your mattress before you truly commit to it. They have free shipping to the U.S. and Canada, and they have over 20,000 reviews with an average 4.8-star rating on the Casper mattress. Check it out for yourself. Head on over to casper.com/cultcast, and if you use the offer code cultcast at checkout, you'll get $50 towards the purchase of any mattress. casper.com/cultcast, and the offer code is cultcast. Okay, let's start with some science fiction here. Buster.
Yes, sir.
Are you ready to get your Westworld-style folding phone? And can you also tell me what that even means? Because I don't watch the show.
Dude, if you haven't watched the show, like they look like the coolest smartphones ever, right, Leander? It's
Totally.
It's like a, you know, basically like a perfect like bezel-less iPhone that you can fold out three times and make it into a tablet.
It's a trifold.
And, yeah, it's a trifolder.
It's high tech.
I think they have some that like just fold out to and just double. But supposedly Samsung's working on making 1,000 prototypes of a similar device this year, and then they're gonna make one for the masses next year. And there's a couple other Chinese companies like Lenovo that are also working on similar stuff. So pretty soon, like all the Android phones are gonna be coming with folding displays, it sounds like.
I was just thinking, if Apple goes to a full screen bezel-less iPhone without a home button, and all the other manufacturers go the same route,
mm-hmm.
I don't really know where they're gonna go from there, because how do you go somewhere different, somewhere more simple from that form factor?
Well, like
it's just a big panel of glass.
Yeah, right. I think, yeah, like this idea is awesome because it's basically like a tablet and an iPhone in one.
So when it's folded up, it's a phone one screen, and then when you unfold it, it turns into a tablet.
So it's basically, it must have a flexible screen. It doesn't have like hinges or anything on it, right?
In the show, they have hinges on it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, because there's foldable screens where I guess that would make sense, where it wouldn't like crease it, but kind of like just curve around it where it bends, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not an engineer.
have to curve very tight, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting too technical for me, man. You lost
me. But anyway, it's got to be possible. They also have, somebody came out with one. It looked like a scroll, like where you just, pull out the screen from both sides of the scroll to look at it that way.
A scroll. So,
yeah.
Oh, really?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, yay, oh, yay.
I think there was a prototype of that at Mobile World Conference.
Who of you would like to see my Instagram photo? He plugged a scroll and showed to everyone.
And as we have pictures of knights and maidens.
I'd actually get behind that design. That'd be pretty cool to have a phone that was a scroll. You just pull it out and unscroll it. I could use that.
Yeah.
I guess this would be cool. It sounds like a cool concept, but I mean, going back to the Apple design, I mean, we're all kind of expecting them to release a phone with no home button, no bezel. And I mean, I don't really know if you're not going to go to a design like what Samsung is working on, where it's a fold out screen, something that a screen doesn't currently do. I don't really know how you get more sleek and modern than that. You've eliminated, you know, all the hardware on it. There's no way to change the design of it, because you're just using a big screen. It kind of seems like you're going to be stuck with that design forever. You can't really go anywhere from that. It's as simple as it gets, in my mind. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I believe that is Johnny Ive's stated ambition, isn't it? You know, a magical piece of glass.
And then at that point, I mean, they're kind of boxing themselves in, though. I mean, you have to change your hardware, I think, to get people excited. You can't just leave it the same and change the operating system every year. I don't think that's going to sell it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think new hardware design is exciting, and people, that motivates people to go out and spend more money. As opposed to the iPad, you can see iPad sales aren't doing well because it's just a big panel of glass. It doesn't really change every year. So people look at it and they're like, by and large, it's the same. Why would I go out and buy a new one?
Yeah, I don't know. I think people, you know, they just don't have a reason to upgrade. They haven't, you know, I know a lot of people who have like the original iPad or early iPads and they still work great. You know, why bother to change it?
Yeah, my aunt has an iPad too. And my uncle really loved her iPad. So she wanted to get him an iPad. And she wanted to get him an iPad too. She didn't want a new iPad. She wanted the iPad too. And she was getting me to go around on eBay and search for this thing. And I was like, you're going to spend as much money on an iPad 2 as you are on a brand new iPad, because they're so rare these days, you can't find them anywhere. But she just loves that device, and she doesn't care if there's newer stuff out there. I don't think I'll ever understand that mindset, because I feel like if Apple releases a new device, even if I don't like the features, I feel compelled to buy it regardless.
Well, right. And I think, you know, like, even if they do have just like a featureless piece of glass, you know, in the front, they're going to add things like, you know, wireless charging, right? If and ever that becomes a thing, you'll upgrade for that alone.
I might, yeah. But non-obvious features like that, I wonder if they would motivate the masses to go out and...
I'm sure, yeah. You know, look at the sales every year, right? You know, I mean... I think the hardware gets less and less connectors, less and less buttons. They've been taking stuff away, haven't they? And they every year they sell more and more of them. You know, the camera, I think, is the sense. You know, updating the cameras, the sensors, the software. There was another, in fact, Buster, what about that other concept that showed up yesterday? You know, for an AR device.
Oh right, like it would always have. Like, it would always show the background, and then Siri would recognize objects and respond to them automatically or something like that.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the camera is, you know, it's no longer just a camera. Or, you know, it has that, you know, I think Pokemon Go showed, right? It can interact with the world. It becomes an eye. The iPhone has an eye.
The iPhone?
The eye in iPhone, right. Well, you know, once they turn that on, once it can start to recognize things in the world, I mean, it adds a whole new level of utility to the thing.
I think that's going to be really cool when they finally get the kinks worked out of that. But I have a feeling that we're like at least five years away from
no, it's much closer.
Augmented reality doing anything useful.
Well, I don't know. You know, like look at there's a lot of games. You know, like Pokemon Go was a good example of that of it put in a toy context.
Yeah, but was it useful?
But that's the only example.
Well, but if you look at the, you know, some of the demos coming out of like the HoloLens, right? Microsoft's HoloLens. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the kind of thing they can do with that device. It's pretty astounding.
But that device, I think, is still under development, and I wonder what it will actually be able to do when it's finally released. Because I think some of the demos that they are providing, they are concepts, really, like that one from Minecraft that they showed on stage where the person was using augmented reality to build Minecraft in three-dimensional space, which I thought was incredible. One of the most amazing demos I've ever seen. If you haven't seen the demo I'm talking about, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But I don't think that is a realistic example of how the HoloLens will be able to be used at this point. They haven't really fleshed out its utility. They're just kind of figuring out what to do with this technology, and that was just kind of like a concept car, if you will. Like, hey, yeah, we might be able to do this. You know what I mean?
Right, but I don't think it's, you know, there are some good example, real world examples already. You know, what about that? Is it Google's app that does real time text translation by overlaying and, you know, matching what it can see? You know, so you point at a sign or a menu. And
yeah,
it'll
World
translate.
Lens.
Yeah, World Lens, right? Is that a Google product?
Actually, I think they changed the name. Now it's Google Translate, I think.
Okay. And, you know, that is the last time I played with that, which is a long time ago, you know, it worked great. And it really was kind of spectacular
and
amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the technology is here. I just think it's, you know, that no one's like, you know, and also, you know, another good Google one is, you know, taking a picture like of a wine bottle, and it'll identify the wine and the label and give you a chance to buy it too. You know, last time I used that, I was completely blown away.
What app were you using to do that?
It was just Google Search, I couldn't. I tried to find it the other day, to show it off at some party. Hey, check this out! You know, and then I couldn't find it. It used to be in the Google. There was a Google search app that used your camera, and I think it still is in the Google app. But you have to go click on the camera setting, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find it. And in fact, if you want to wait on 20 minutes,
you took a picture of the wine bottle, and then you basically submitted it as a search, and then it went online and found you that bottle online.
Right.
That really is amazing.
Yeah, it worked great.
It's kind of like in the Amazon app where you can pretty much scan anything and it will find it on Amazon for you. that one bit of functionality is like ruining like brick and mortar stores forever, because everyone goes into a brick and mortar store and is like, oh, this looks pretty cool. And they scan it on Amazon and they're like, all right, peace out. I'm going to go buy this at home.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible, isn't it? Terrible.
All right, well, since we're already talking about iPads, let's talk about this iPad news, which I do find to be somewhat exciting, because my iPad, I have an iPad Air 2. Let's see, I think I bought it in 2014. When did the iPad Air iPad Air 2 come out? It was 2014, wasn't it? It's been a long time since Apple has introduced iPad updates. I mean, they did the iPad Pro, which I didn't feel was right for me. And there is a rumor that Apple will announce its next generation iPad lineup next month at the very first event at Apple Park. And these two being happening together, I think make a lot of sense to me that Apple's going to wait until Apple Park is ready. They can have it at the new Steve Jobs Theater. Sources say that the production of the new 10.5-inch iPad Pro has been brought forward for the launch. The device is expected to be accompanied by a 12.9-inch iPad Pro and a more affordable 9.7-inch iPad. So I guess that might mean that they're going to drop the price on the iPad Air, would be my guess, and possibly just give it a really basic hardware, you know, bump and leave the form factor the same. The new 10.5-inch iPad is expected to have the same resolution as the 12.9-inch iPad Pro and the same pixel density of the iPad Mini, which is 326 pixels per square inch instead of 264 pixels per square inch. I'm going to be curious to see if the 10.5-inch iPad has a home button. It kind of seems like Apple is going to ditch the home button on their premium devices, since that's largely what we expect for the new iPhone. What do you think, Buster? Home button or not?
No, I think, I don't know. On the iPad, probably not. I don't know. No idea.
They got to do something drastic.
I don't know if they, well, I guess on the 10.5-inch one, yeah, they could get rid of it. But they're also supposedly releasing an updated 9.7-inch iPad Pro. So, like, on that one, I think they would keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know about on the 12.9-incher. Maybe it'll have the same type of form factor as the old one and keep it, too.
I wonder if they're going to bring Force Touch to the iPads, too.
Yeah, they really need 3D Touch.
I was reading that because the screen size is so large, the technology doesn't work well on large screens. Mm-hmm. And that's why they haven't, you know, brought 3D Touch to the iPad line yet. You would think they would need to do that, though, for a premium 10.5-inch device. I mean, I'm guessing this device is going to be more expensive, too.
Right.
So it's going to have, you know, it's got to have all the bells and whistles. And I wouldn't be surprised to see 10.5-inch iPad, all the bells and whistles, Force Touch, no home button. It looks just like the iPhone, the new iPhone 8 or whatever they end up calling it. And it's just a larger version of that. How do you guys like that vision of the future? Is that Westworld enough for you?
Well, it doesn't fold
in half.
Doesn't fold. Okay. Yeah. And although, also, have you tried hard enough? I'm sure you could fold
it. I think that's sort of wishful thinking. I've got some friends
that can help you with that.
It's total wishful thinking, though. There's no way they're going to unveil like the iPhone, you know, design in an iPad before they unveil the iPhone itself.
That's what I think. Like, yeah, why would they unveil an iPad without a home button? You know, because that would just show them exactly what they're going to do with the iPhone.
Oh, man. I hate to admit this, but I think you guys might be right about that. The iPhone is the premium device for Apple, right? Like, why would they unveil a new design that they're going to bring over to the iPhone? That wouldn't be shocking enough.
I don't know. They did do the smart connector. It's only been on the iPad, so it's not totally uncommon for them to add something to one and not the first.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to bring the smart connector to the iPhone. It doesn't really seem to be useful on an iPhone.
Right.
In fact, that connector has been, to date, somewhat overhyped, right? Like, we were kind of like, oh, man, what's this going to be used for? And to date, it's a keyboard. Do you want a keyboard? You got to use the smart connector. Other than that, you won't even know that it's back there.
Is there another peripheral that uses it?
There probably is. There's probably one that we don't know about.
For what? The smart connector?
Yeah.
No, I don't think there is. It's just,
as far as I've heard, it's just the keyboard.
Yeah, the keyboard.
So, corroborating the rumors that we're going to be getting new iPads here pretty soon, there is a website called Fixu that appears to have garnered information that Apple is testing four different iPad models in the San Francisco Bay Area. Last year, Fixu saw new device names pop up in its logs about a month before the new iPads were announced. So it does look like we have new iPads on the way. And you know what? I'm probably going to buy a 10.5 inch when it comes out. Leander, are you with me? I think you are.
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm kind of happy with my, you know, my current iPad.
Well, that's only because you haven't seen the 10.5 inch yet.
Yeah.
Do you still have your 12.9 inch iPad Pro?
I do, but you know, I hate to say it. I kind of, you know, it's been a bit neglected.
Dude, that thing is massive. Yeah. I honestly don't know why anyone would buy that iPad. It's so heavy.
Well, you got to stick it on your desk and you know, be doodling on your pencil in your black turtleneck like an architect all day, you know.
Does it come with a black turtleneck, or do you have to buy that separately?
You have to buy it separately, but
that's
it's
a bummer. It should be packaged together.
It should come with it, shouldn't it, bundled? Yeah, you know, it's because, you know, I mainly use my iPad for like reading and email and light work and that kind of stuff, and it, like Buster just said, it is a bit too heavy. You can't really hold it with one hand.
Apple had a vision for that laptop or for that iPad of being a laptop replacement, and pros using it for, you know, the things that pros do. But it really seems like the only pro application is artwork, digital arts, multimedia. And I wonder if there are enough multimedia artists out there who are buying that thing. Because other than that, it's just a big iPad, and it doesn't really have any pro utility, in my opinion. And it's huge, and it weighs... I think it weighs over 2 pounds, doesn't it, Leander? Do you know?
2 pounds? No, I don't think it's anywhere near that.
It feels like it weighs 10. Like, I picked that thing up, and it has a lot. It has a lot of mass for its size, I thought. I mean, it's still a lightweight piece of technology, but for an iPad, it feels heavy.
It's an interesting question. You know, like, I don't know if anyone's really done a survey of, like, you know, how well it's doing amongst pros. I ran across this guy's an illustrator. His work on Twitter the other day, and started checking it out, and he does it all in the iPad, and it was really amazing. Luke did a story, didn't he, just last week about the poster for Logan, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Wolverine movie that was done on an iPad. Mm-hmm, and it was, you know, the movie poster was made on that, and the artist like tweeted out, you know, proud to see the poster I did on my iPad, you know, up over Times Square.
Wow, that is crazy.
So there's definitely a lot of people who are using it. But like you said, you know, it seems to be the ones that have come to my attention anyway are illustrators and designers. Wasn't there a recent update for AutoCAD or one of the 3D design programs that was iPad? I saw someone raving about that on the iPad, I think.
No idea. I always hear digital artists talking about Wacom. I never hear them talking about iPads. That's purely anecdotal. I mean, maybe that's not accurate. Maybe they're using like half and half. Like some people like Wacom.
It's interesting though. Yeah, we should do a survey. We should try to find out, you know, like what's the state of the art on with the iPad Pro amongst pros at the moment. I mean, I, you know, to be honest, I heard a lot of buzz about Microsoft. You know, but people moving over to Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. You mean like the Surface Studio, like that big screen?
Yeah,
that bends down.
And Luke was looking into that. You know, he was trying to get hold of like some Final Cut Pro. User groups and to see if they were like, you know, filmmakers and other pro users were shifting over, but he hasn't come back to it yet. So
that little circle accessory that I don't know if it's included with the Surface Studio or if you buy that separately, I'm guessing it's separate. I used that at the Microsoft store. I went to the Microsoft store just to check out that one piece of technology, and it's really a beautiful device. And that little circular thing that you could put on the screen and like swirl it to change like your paintbrush or your colors or whatever else, you know, they ended up building into that little thing. It was a really cool interface device. And something like that would be pretty cool for the iPad as well. And I was really surprised to see something like that from Microsoft because it was really kind of novel, yeah. I thought, you know, and it seemed like it would actually be useful if you were a digital artist.
Yeah, I don't know how novel it is. It looked very much like the Griffin PowerMate, right? Do you remember that?
No, what's that?
It's like a little hardware version, and it sits on the. It doesn't go on the screen. It sits on the desk.
I remember like that thing. Didn't they stop selling it?
I don't know.
Maybe it wasn't as useful as it wasn't as useful as I thought it would be.
I think, it required quite a bit of setup. And again, you know, like it wasn't as easy as plunking it on the screen and then suddenly, you know, having it suddenly interact with all the software.
Yeah,
you had to go into the settings and set it up. Because I remember I had one, and it was like, oh my goodness, you know, like you could do all kinds of crazy things with it, but you know, I just used it for a volume control.
It's like $300. You're like, that's a great volume control knob.
Right.
Okay. Well. I have had this next story in my back pocket for quite a while, and what a perfect opportunity to talk about this. So There is a New York Times reporter. His name is Nick Bilton, I think. Does that ring a bell, Leander?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Bilton. So he wrote this for the New York Times, and I want to read this to you as a setup for this next story. He says, when Steve Jobs was running Apple, he was known to call journalists to either pat them on the back for a recent article or, more often than not, explain how they got things wrong. I was on the receiving end of a few of those calls, but nothing shocked me more than something Mr. Jobs said to me in late 2010 after he had finished chewing me out for something I had written about, an iPad shortcoming. Yeah, it is Nick Bilton. So Nick Bilton said he assumingly asked Jobs, so your kids must love the iPad, to which Steve Jobs replied, they haven't used it. We limit how much technology our kids use at home, which I found immediately to be shocking. And then it really made a lot of sense to me because Steve Jobs seemed like such a Renaissance man. Like, he probably made his kids read books, like actual real books. What do you think about this statement, Leander? I mean, it kind of seems like he's shirking all this technology onto all of us to make us stupider while protecting his own children.
I know, it does seem kind of rich, doesn't it? I remember when I was at Wired, you know, I went to I got invited to the school down in the Bayview here, which is one of the poorest districts in San Francisco. And they all, you know, the classrooms were full of computers, and there were computers in the hallway, there were computers in the library. They had all these brand new iMacs. I did a story about all this equipment they got. You know, they got some huge grant from somewhere to get all this computer equipment. And then I went down to a school in Palo Alto, you know, in fact, in Jobs' neighborhood, where all the people, you know, the local people sent their kids, and there were no schools no computers in the school at all, except for this one classroom where this teacher had a bunch of old Apple IIs. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding, and he used the Apple IIs to teach, you know, sort of basic programming. But he said. And I told him about the school up in the Bayview, and he said, well, you know, those kids, you know, and the houses, the environments they come from, they don't have access to computers. You know, they probably don't have computers at home. The only way they're going to get to you know, their hands on a computer is at school, whereas it's the complete opposite here in Palo Alto. You know, like, everyone has computers at home. Their parents work in the computing industry. You know, they have no trouble getting access to technology. Their problem is getting access to something else that's not the computer. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, that's the same attitude I imagine that Jobs had. With his kids, you know, it was like, I think he probably wanted to introduce them to stuff that was outside of the stuff that was central to his life. And maybe an old-fashioned attitude about, you know, learning the basics first, you know, learning to read, learning to appreciate books.
I feel like sometimes technology is making us all stupider. Would you guys agree with that? Buster, I have a feeling that you might agree with that.
In some ways.
You're a book guy. You're always reading books, aren't you?
Yeah, I love reading. I got a degree in English Lit, but I don't think that iPads are evil either, because they're also, like, it's vital to know the tools that you have. And, you know, like, it's really nice to be able to have, like, a smartphone out in the wilderness that can tell you exactly which star is which or what not to tie or... And, you know, I guess you could internalize all those facts, but, I don't know, smartphones make it convenient to, like, tap into a wealth of information if you know how to use them, right?
But would you rather be, if you're in the wilderness, would you rather be with Bear Grylls or a guy who uses his iPad to search for how to survive on Google?
well, that would be me, and that guy would probably be a pretty cool guy, so I don't know.
Like, hey, this guy's pretty cool, actually. I do what I got this guy.
Hey, as long as we got Wi-Fi or LTE signal, we're good, right?
We can survive out here, as long as my LTE remains intact. I think there's something... there's something about reading books and being unplugged that makes you a smarter person. And I say this as somebody who I feel has a total addiction to technology.
Didn't you just spend 63 hours like playing, you know,
at least some
Nintendo game? Yeah.
So yeah. This is why anecdotally I feel like I'm right, because I feel like if I were to just shut off all my technology and just become a guy who read books and, you know, did long walks in nature, like Steve Jobs, you know, used to do, I would probably be a much smarter, more well-rounded person. I'd probably be way more articulate. I feel like I would be a better person if I actually did that.
I don't know if you'll be a better person. I don't think like going outside and walking in nature makes you a better person by any means. It's just, I don't know. In many ways, like during the weekends, I definitely completely unplug and don't check anything. So it is really nice, like as far as like mental recovery, because sometimes, like you're saying, you are like overloaded almost with technology, and so it is good to like go back and kind of find a base volume or something for yourself.
I feel like I compulsively check my phone for stuff too. Like, it's, you remember when you were a kid and you were constantly going to the fridge to see if something was there to eat, and there was nothing there, and then you'd come back like an hour later and you'd look again, and you're constantly doing that all day looking for something good to eat. There's never anything in the fridge. That's what I do with my phone. Like, I'm constantly looking at it and there's nothing there. And then I go back a half hour later, maybe less, and I go and peruse Twitter again or Instagram. I'm always waiting for the next update from people. And yeah, I feel like I'm addicted to it.
Yeah, as a lot of people are. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, I guess it is a bit detrimental. Farhad Manji, you know, the writer for the New York Times, technology writer, he tweeted out yesterday, you know, he often like starts to run a shower and then he'll stand there checking Twitter while the shower's running. Does anyone else do that? And there was this long thread of all these other people saying exactly the same thing. Yeah, you know, they start all these activities and then you get lost in Twitter. I know everyone does it. I spend so much time on Twitter. It's crazy. Like, I started, you know, my book reading has really fallen off since, you know, you get a device, a gadget. And Twitter's so compulsive because it, you know, I like to check the news on Twitter and there's always something happening, especially with Trump around. You know, there's crazy news every day. So, and it's easy to go down, you know, get lost in a rabbit hole.
Oh, man. It's an endless rabbit hole. I mean, you start off, how many times have you started looking on the internet for something? And then like 45 minutes later, you realize you're in a totally different place. You don't know how you got there. And you didn't even look at the original thing that you were trying to look at.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that is all, you know, all the time, more often than not.
It's so distracting. So I found it fascinating that Steve Jobs, he must have understood this or thought similarly about technology. And he wanted to limit his kids to have them be more well-rounded people, in my opinion.
Well, you know, in the notes that you put together, I think the more interesting point comes from the guy at the end.
Well, I was going to bring this up because I thought this is a great counter-argument to what we've been talking about so far. So this guy's name is Ali Partovi. He is a founder of iLike, advisor to Facebook, Dropbox, Zappos, and he was saying, I wouldn't dream of limiting how much time a kid can spend with her paintbrushes or playing her piano or writing. I think it's absurd to limit time spent creating computer art, editing video, and computer programming. And he went on to say something that I think I really wholly agree with, that if you're using computer for creation, that's really the key. If you're just sitting around, you know, using it as a television, then it can make you stupid. But if you're creating on it, that is an act that is worthwhile. And so you wouldn't want to limit someone in their capacity to do that. And I totally agree, like, especially if you're trying to learn how to paint or, you know, be a computer programmer. And technology has served me well over the course of my life. I mean, there's a lot of things. I always think about, if technology ceased to exist today, what would I do for a living? Right. And I'd probably be dead. Like, I have no actual skills. What would I talk about? Like, all these people out there can like farm and tell what?
Wouldn't you be like a town crier or something?
Maybe. I'd be like King Joffrey's jester or something, dancing around in a hat, probably drunk. And there's nothing else I'm qualified to do.
Right.
So it's certainly been good for me. But it was interesting, this story in the New York Times, I'll link in the show notes, goes on to talk about some other CEOs, and Nick Bilton was saying there are other higher up people in these technology companies who feel the same way Steve Jobs did. Evan Williams, he founded Blogger, Twitter, and Medium. And he and his wife have limited iPads and technology use in their homes. And he says for their kids, they have hundreds of books, physical books, that they could pick up and read anytime. Sometimes I feel like reading a book is like going to the gym for your brain.
Well, I hate to say this, but there's a certain class aspect to this.
So you think that he's just kind of being snooty?
Well, these are all kids of, you know, people who are immensely wealthy. And
their parents can afford a lot of books.
Right.
It's not like books are cheap.
Books are like dirt cheap. I mean, you can go to like half time. Well,
you can go to a public library, but if you're buying your own books, like, it's at least $10 for like a paperback. So
you can get used books, though, man. Used books, they're practically giving them away on Amazon.
It's not the cost of the books. Right. It's the knowledge, and it's what, you know, the kind of thing, you know, if you're aristocratic in Britain, you know, you go to a public school where they teach you Latin. Mm-hmm. And if you're really aristocratic, you go to a school where you learn, you know, mainly how to behave in social situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like The Crown had a really good essential theme of The Crown was exactly that. As a kid, you know, Queen Elizabeth wasn't prepared to be a head of state. She was taught how to host dinner parties for her husband. She had no formal education. She had, you know, and it's ironic, as one of the richest people in the country or in the world, you know, she can have anything she wants and she's surrounded by books, but she's not being prepared for that because that's not part of her life.
Mm.
Her education prepared her for the life that she was going to be leading, which is one of entertainment and, you know, tending to horses and going to high-end functions. And I think, you know, the kids, like Ev Williams' kids and Steve Jobs' kids, you know, they are going to attend, you know, some of the best, they have the opportunity to go to the best universities in the world. They're not going to have to go and, you know, get a job like you or I have to go and get a job. You know, they enter a world of connections and money. And so the kind of education they have is probably better served by books, by being learned, by being able to, you know, quote ancient philosophers and know mythology, because, you know, they live a much more worldly life, right? And they're going to be, and it's going to be a completely different life. They're not going to have to learn the sort of skills and the sort of job skills, I think, that, you know, middle-class people have to learn.
Well, even if you take it away from books, I feel like technology can often distract you from really developing a skill deeply and thoroughly. You know, like, if you think back to days when guys like Mozart and Beethoven were alive and how much time they had to spend honing their crafts from a young age, and they didn't have anything to distract them. They didn't have Facebook. They didn't have movies or any of that kind of stuff. And so they were forced to really develop their own skills. And I wonder if that ability to focus and go deeply into a topic and really develop it has been diminished over time as we have been distracted more and more with technology that is entertaining and takes up our time, but doesn't necessarily make us more well-rounded people. I want to move on from this conversation with this last piece, which I thought was really funny. I got this from Reddit. When Beethoven was challenged to an improvisation duel by one of his rivals named Steibelt, Beethoven took a piece of Steibelt's music, turned it upside down, played it, and then improvised on that theme for over an hour. Steibelt simply left halfway through. And I'm like, where are the Beethovens, right? Where are our modern-day Beethovens? And I kind of wonder if maybe we're also distracted with technology, that we don't take the time to become the next Beethoven in whatever arena of life most interests us, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think it's a well-worn argument, and to the point of cliche, that people do argue this all the time. But I think that there's a very compelling case to be made for the opposite too. That, you know, kids can learn as many useful skills and on the computer, you know, that are the modern day equivalents of Beethoven. You know, I'm sure there are kids who can code beautifully. You know, the way that Beethoven could write a symphony, and you would be astonished at what that kid was able to achieve. And he spent his childhood, you know, with his face pressed up against the screen.
Or
I'm sure,
like,
there are many examples of that.
Deadmau5, who makes his entire living creating digital music, he would never exist either.
Yeah, I know one of our kids' friends. You know, she's a 16-year-old girl. She's an astonishing illustrator, and it's all done digitally. Hmm. It's, you know, some of the best work I've ever seen. It looks like it's done with pencil, but it's all done with It's done with a Wacom tablet, but it's astonishing work. It's amazing. You know, she's just using a different medium. But it's the same skill that, you know, she wouldn't be out of place, you know, go all the way back to medieval times, you know, like illustrating beautiful Bibles or doing watercolors, you know, or painting. You know, it's a fine art tradition that lives on. She's just using a different set of tools.
It's an interesting conversation to me. I probably never would have become a photographer or been interested in photography if I didn't have access to a digital camera, because I think film is just... it's so complicated and esoteric. I mean, you don't get the immediate feedback of digital photography either. You have to, like, take a picture, keep a log of what you did, and when you go back to develop it, actually look at your log and see what you did to create the picture that you have there, and then change things from there. Whereas digital photography, you can change it in real time and everything's right there. So it does. It's created a whole new creative medium in all these different areas of life that wouldn't otherwise have existed. talking about going deep and being thorough, I think we've officially beat that one to death. And let's move on. I think we actually just have our last segment of the show, Cultcast Choices. Before we do that, though, I want to give a shout out to Zach for sending us an email. He says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to the show since the beginning. When I started listening, I was 15, and I had an iPhone 3GS." That shout out to Zach's parents for letting him listen to our show when he's 15. That was the only Apple product I owned. Today I am 20. Wow. We saw Zach through his adolescence.
His formative years. Yeah.
His formative years. We took part in that. He says, "Today I'm 20. I had an iPhone 7 Plus, an iPad Air 2, an Apple TV, third and fourth gen. I just purchased my first MacBook Pro, and also my wife." Dang, he's 20. Damn. He's already got a wife. This guy's on it, dude. "My wife owns an iPhone 7, an Apple Watch, and an iPad Mini, too. You can say we are Apple super fans. You sure can, y'all." He says, "I love the show. Keep up the great work." Holy moly. He's 20 years old. He's already got more Apple gear than all of us combined. We got to step up our game, Lander. We can't let this guy outdo us. Either that, or he's going to have to replace one of us on the show. Anyway, thanks to Zach for writing in. Let's move on to Cultcast Choices. These are going to be a little weird. You guys ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This first question is, a scientist offers you a serum that gifts you the ability to see 1 hour into the future, but its side effect is you will have a lifetime of really bad breath. Will you choose the gift of foresight, Leander Katie?
Foresight or halitosis? Well, I already have halitosis, so I got nothing to lose.
Oh, yeah, really? You had everything to gain then.
Yeah.
An hour into the future, think of what you could do at the horse track.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of scenarios. Yeah.
You'd be the next Biff Tannen. Okay. Buster.
Wait, so what is it?
So you have the gift of seeing 1 hour into the future. Okay. But the serum side effect is a lifetime of really terrible bad breath.
So I guess no.
So you're gonna refuse the gift of foresight to have fresh, minty, clean breath for the rest of your life.
Yeah, because I would like to enjoy myself with the opposite sex someday. I don't know. God, who's ever gonna kiss you if you have halitosis? And all you That's can see point. Is 1 hour into the future. I don't know. Maybe it's worth it. Halitosis wouldn't be that bad.
I mean, yeah, dude.
You would just have to drink Listerine like every hour, I guess.
Yeah, or you'd have to find a lady with no sense of smell.
Oh, that really. Would be good. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the foresight, man. I don't want to have bad breath, but think what you could do with 1 hour of foresight and the winning lotto numbers. You'd be the man. That'd be awesome.
There's nothing worse than bad breath, though, is there? You know, like
bad breath is really bad.
You know someone with bad breath, and it's hard to get to talk to them, isn't it? Because
yes,
especially because no one ever wants to tell you you have bad breath. They're always pretending like it's fine, but trying not to like get close to your face.
See, but if my thinking was, if you have 1 hour of foresight into the future, you'll be able to see who's going to be put off by your bad breath, and you'll figure out how to talk to them. You can figure it out. Yeah.
That's a good point. Okay, let's move on to the next one. You are granted any one superpower you desire, but the side effect is loud, uncontrollable flatulence.
Did you make these up yourself? There seems to be a theme here.
No, I swear, these are the last ones that have to do with,
bodily functions.
Bodily functions, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Leander, will you become the next superhero, or will you remain a mere mortal?
Oh, do I have to choose the superpower I want?
Anyone that you want. Yeah, anyone that you would like. But
I don't know, yeah. I'd like to fly, I think.
Yeah? Well, maybe you could use your loud, uncontrollable flatulence to get you high.
That extra boost up into the upper
That extra
upper
boost
atmosphere.
When you need to get to the bad guy even faster. So yeah, that you think that would be a worthy trade-off?
Again,
for you?
You know, I already seem to have that problem, so nothing to lose, really.
It's all win-wins for Leander here today. Buster.
I'll pass.
Yeah, I think I would pass, too. Because at least with the bad breath, you could conceal it, right? But with the loud, controllable flatulence, I mean, it's hard to conceal that. Like, maybe you could put, like, a muffler on there or something.
Maybe.
Or, like, a silencer or something. But, yeah, I think I would just remain mere mortal on that one. Okay.
Unless you want to be known as Fart Man, you know?
He was a pretty cool character. Wasn't that Howard Stern's character?
I don't know, was it?
Fart Man. At the MTV Music Awards. You don't remember this? This is a long time ago. Where he, like, was lowered down onto the stage from this high rope, and he farted, and the entire podium exploded. You don't remember this? Okay, let's see here. We're on number three. So you discover you possess a strange genetic anomaly that raises your IQ to a perfect 180. But this phenomenon is inextricably activated only when you maintain a long mullet and mustache.
Oh, hell yeah.
Buster,
yes.
Will you be the great mind our world needs?
Of course. God, I get so, hair on top of my head and on my face. Like, yeah,
you get a
fine.
Long flowing mane, a party in the back.
You could give me the ugliest mullet ever, too. I wouldn't even care because I'd be smarter than everybody.
You'd figure out a way to convince them that your hair is actually cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ladies would love it, too. You know, it'd be great.
Dude, some ladies love that look. Long mullets and a mustache. Mm-hmm. They go wild. There's something powerful about that look, isn't it? Like, when you see a guy with a mullet and a mustache, it's like, man, that guy's kind of a baller.
It's fashion forward, I think. It's going to come back. You know how
it all comes
back eventually? It'll eventually come back.
I had a pretty serious mullet in third grade, but it was, like, curly in the back.
Yeah, me too. I had one of those, too.
If it ever comes back, I'm definitely growing that thing back out. All right, Leander. Will you be the great mind our world needs?
Well, I've already got 180 IQs, but I would like some hair, so I'll take it, yeah.
Again, another win-win for Leander.
I'll take it with the side effect, yeah. I don't care about the intellect. I just want the hair.
Who was it in Walking Dead that had that? It was Eugene. Eugene with that amazing mullet.
Oh, right, yeah.
Okay, this is the last one I got. This is the most sadistic question that I could come up with. An airline offers you a free first class pass so you can travel anytime you'd like to anywhere you'd like to go. But the caveat, you must also bring with you one Mr. Alex E. Heath. Are you going bon voyage or are you staying home, Buster?
Oh, dude, me and Alex, we're going to go tear it up. It's going to get wild. I've already had to deal with Alex throwing up in my hotel room and not telling anyone for 3 days. So how much worse can it get?
He hid it from you?
Yeah.
He had two beers and he couldn't hold it down, huh?
Yeah, it was the shrimp. It was the shrimp.
It was the shrimp, man. Oh, dude, he puked up shrimp in your hotel room?
No, it wasn't really the shrimp. It was... He blamed it on the shrimp, but he was
just
drinking too much
in
at CES. Probably was. I didn't see it. He just tried to clean it out. It was horrible.
How did you figure out that he'd done that?
He finally admitted to it like 2 days later when the cleaning lady said something to Leander's wife, I think.
Somebody puking here?
It was like they hit him with
a t-shirt over it or something. One of those freaky t-shirts from CES.
He's like a 5-year-old trying to hide that. Like, that's the
it really
worst way
was
to hide
like
it.
Going with a high schooler to like on their first like road trip without mom and dad or something like that. That's what it was like.
I remember the first time I met Alex Heath in person at CES, and I remember thinking to myself, "Do his parents know that he's here? Like, did they say it was okay for him to come? He's so young looking."
Yeah.
All right, Leander. Are you going on that vacation you've always dreamed of, or are you staying home?
With Alex, yeah, I'd take Alex. He was good fun.
Yeah, you know what? I'd go, too. That crazy, kooky Alex. He is a lot of fun. We give him a lot of crap, but he'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he'd be a lot of fun, yeah. I like his he wears a bow tie. And he looks
he's got
very,
class.
He does. He looks collegiate.
Southern gentleman. And,
definitely.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. He'd be a lot of fun to go on an adventure with.
He's got a killer white suit, too, like a pure white suit. I know people always think that that's not true because I make fun of him so much, but that's actually 100% true. He has a super handsome KFC white suit that he wears when he goes out. It looks very dapper. Okay, well, that was cult cast choices, and I think you'll agree that was probably all the cult cast that you need from us this week. And that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. But if you can't get enough of us, if you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, we're always there just hanging out, lurking with our binoculars, especially Leander. You can come say hi to us. I'm at Arifon Busters BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. Hopefully, we'll have some new Apple hardware to talk about in the next week or two. But until next time, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Keep it sleazy. What's new with you?
Nothing.
How's Mavicking?
Oh, so good.
Are you still doing it?
Yeah.
They haven't sent the freaking hitman out there to get their drone back.
You're gonna embed Buster's latest one. It's fucking amazing.
Oh, of the
that
mountain?
One where you fly from like that mountain outwards.
Right, yeah. He's hanging onto the bottom of it. This is one where he actually zooms out, and it's in a valley right in Arizona. Where is it, Buster?
Yeah, it's just at the Superstition Mountains in Arizona.
Man, you guys have so much cool crap out there.
Oh, I know. It is an awesome state.
Like, if I were droning as much as you, I'd be, like, zooming out from one Starbucks after another. Just going into the sky. That's all there is. Right.